Miss Yarra the Bird.
Ave Satana!
Hail
Satan! Hail Satan!
Greetings, heathens. Welcome to Hail Satan. This is the podcast exploring Satanism, culture, and life in general through the eyes of modern Satanists. My name is Joseph Rose. I'm going to be your host today. I'm a member of the Satanic Temple and founder of a little group called Satanic Delco. Today, we've got a lot. I'm going to give some updates on a couple of things. I'm going to answer some questions from listeners, and we're going to talk about some legal stuff related to the Satanic Temple. But first, we have some new members to the Patreon gang. I think we have like 13 or 14 new members since last time. Let's see. We've got Tara, Rob, Sonia, Gerard, Tomasa, Glenn, Levi, Jen, Chris, Nina, Veronica, Greybeard, and Augustine. Guys, from the bottom of my squishy, psychedelic, satanic heart, I really, really appreciate your support. It means a lot to me, and I thank you all very, very much. Really, you're the best. Now, I want to get to some updates that I've been meaning to give. I always sort of think now's not the time, but eventually it's got to be time, so now's the time. First, Satanic Delco. As I record this episode in late January of 2021, it's just a few weeks away from Satanic Delco's first anniversary, which is very exciting to me. And I just couldn't be more pleased and proud of what this group has accomplished in its first year of existence. Not only is it a tiny group as far as numbers go, but it's been by far the most active, engaged, and impactful group of Satanists anywhere in our region. And I mention that part because it's just a real point of pride for us. We happened to find our feet at a time when the world was being forced to deal with this crazy, confusing pandemic. And while we can all bitch and complain about the various ways that we were inconvenienced and hurt by it all, there were people out there already suffering and struggling in ways far beyond what most of us ever have to contend with. And then they had the pandemic dumped on top of all of that. So after taking a few long, hard looks at the seven tenets, I think the idea of sitting on our hands and making excuses while so many people in our region needed help just wasn't an option for us. The question wasn't ever, should we try to help them? It was just simply a matter of who can we help first and second and so on. And so we did our best as far as helping some folks, but beyond that stuff, I think we became a very valuable resource for one another in the group. So many important relationships have been formed through this, and it's just been a really great experience so far, and I'm really looking forward to what we can accomplish in this next year. We've already got some things cooking, and I think we're really going to outdo ourselves. I can't wait to get more of it cooking and tell everybody about it. And as far as the Patreon channel, when this podcast started, some new attention was brought to Satanic Delco because of it. And we started to get all of these requests for membership from all over the place. And at that time, we had been keeping the membership limited to people who lived pretty close within our little home county. And over the last month or so, a lot of changes were made. Among those changes were a dramatic shrinking of the size of Satanic Delco, as well as opening access to the group to members of this podcast's Patreon channel. So, if you're already a member of the Patreon, or, you know, if you join at some point, and you feel like you'd like to come join in with the other members of Satanic Delco, you are welcome to do so, regardless of where you live. You're also welcome to join in on our weekly Zoom chats, which are cool, our movie nights, and everything else. We'll be happy to have you, and I think you will surely find some value in the community. And now, let's do some listener mail, shall we? I picked a couple of emails that were maybe a bit longer with some interesting questions, which I found is something I really like to do. I'm enjoying the questions that get me thinking on a specific topic that I can really dig into. So let's do it. First up is Cambrin. I hope I'm saying that right. She writes, I've been pondering my question for Ask a Satanist, and with times as they are, I'd like to ask where a Satanist would stand if they were in the presence of a violent horde of madness, the likes of which occurred at Capitol Hill and could potentially occur again. I ask because personally, through Satanism, I am learning to better practice active compassion and empathy, but at the root of my being, I want to fight back with everything I have in any given necessary moment against tyranny, hate, and ignorance. Basically meaning, I've physically engaged with an asshole or two in my younger years. What would a Satanist do? Okay, let's start right there at the end of what you said. You physically engaged with some assholes. I don't know specifically what that entails, but let's assume it means you initiated some level of violence against some people that you subjectively classified as assholes. Now, keep in mind that most likely, somewhere, at some point, someone out there has subjectively considered you to be the asshole. Never forget that part. Now that that violence has been committed, evaluate it a little bit. Is the world a better place in any noteworthy, significant way because of it? Did you manage to change those people's views or behaviors in any noteworthy, significantly positive way over the long term? Did you save or directly impact the life of another person in a positive way through these acts of violence? If not, what actual purpose did they serve? I think really often violence comes from frustration, right? You want something from a person, a group, society, whatever it is, and you're not getting it. Have you exhausted every other option? Have you truly exhausted every other possible option toward getting what you want? And have you given healthy consideration to the possibility that, allow me to quote a wise old sage, you can't always get what you want? Sometimes the realistic culmination of a situation is just an unfortunate, hard-to-swallow, tough shit. That's just what it is. Is there ever a situation where violence outside the context of self-defense is appropriate? Yes, that is certainly possible. But they're pretty rare, I think. And honestly, no great realistic examples of it spring to mind right now as I'm thinking about it. I know stuff like punch a Nazi became a fun meme on the internet over the last couple of years. But even that, what does it accomplish? You gave one guy a fat lip or a broken nose. You added some fuel to his fire, most likely, without doing a single thing to actually solve an issue or help anyone. All you did was make yourself feel a little better. If it doesn't mean anything, then it's essentially just a selfish act. You get to go home and think to yourself, I'm so proud of myself. I'm a warrior on the side of all that is good and just in the world, and I've proven that by inflicting pain on another human being whose views are different than mine. And the rush of adrenaline, combined with the high fives and hell yeahs from your friends, will reinforce how awesome you are. But down here on Earth, where it really counts, not a single fucking thing has changed. No matter which side you were on at the Capitol building that day, nothing has changed. One side punched some people, the other side punched some people. Some people actually died. And for what? Thanks to all that punching, what has changed? So the most direct answer I can give to the question of what would a Satanist do is to say that a good Satanist, in my opinion, would make a critical observation of any given circumstance and act as appropriately as possible while keeping the seven tenets in mind. I hope that is something close to a satisfactory answer to your question. Next, Danielle writes in. She says, I have two questions, if you don't mind. I discovered the Satanic Temple through Hail Satan documentary, so I've never actually met a Satanist. By the end of the movie, I felt like I had really found my people, and for the last week, I've been doing research and deciding if it's for me. I'm hung up on two aspects of the Satanic Temple, though, that seem to be contradictions, but I'm hoping it's just due to my limited and new understanding of the temple. Question number one. TST protests, like the Baphomet statue, require the general public to be disgusted or outraged for them to be effective. The whole point is that Christians are angry about the statue, so they take down their own Ten Commandments statue to keep away the Baphomet. On the other hand, the group now does community service to present themselves as a viable option for the average person. In general, they seem to be legitimizing themselves as a non-theistic religion. I think this is great, by the way. If the group continues to be wholesome and accepted, won't that make the protests less effective and therefore make the United States even more religious? If the U.S. becomes too accepting of other religions, there will just be an even narrower boundary of church and state. Fighting for ourselves to be included is fighting for more religion in politics when ultimately we want religion and politics to be separated. It feels like these aren't sustainable over time. Oh boy, what a question, Danielle. Okay. So your direct question is, if the group continues to be wholesome and accepted, won't that make the protests less effective and therefore make the U.S. even more religious? Okay. I don't think the problem is that the U.S. is religious. If there's a religion problem regarding the United States, it's the problem of theocracy, which is a form of government in which God or a deity is recognized as the supreme civil ruler. That might sound silly to some people at first, but go ahead and take a close look at your government-issued currency in your wallet right now. Listen to just about every speech given by any president of the United States. Our sporting events can't even begin until we've heard either the national anthem or God Bless America. One or the other, either will do. By default, witnesses that testify before the Supreme Court of the United States place their hand on the Holy Bible to ensure that they will definitely tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. It is so deeply ingrained into the very fabric of American culture that most of us don't even notice it anymore. The point of all that is, of course, just to illustrate the extreme and inappropriate way that religion already has a deep hold on nearly every aspect of the American experience. And if the wildly unlikely scenario ever came to be that Satanism was even remotely comparable to Christianity in size or political influence, then what we would have is true religious plurality, which I believe is a primary pipe dream of the Satanic Temple, and one that I share with them. For that to happen, it would take fundamental changes to almost everything about our current system of government, and I doubt that any of us will be alive to see such changes. Danielle's question number two. Tenet number 4 and number 7 kind of contradict each other. Tenet number 4 is the "we will die defending your right to say whatever you want" tenet, and I'm just not on board with defending hate speech or the right to have hate speech. Having unrestricted hate speech just brings the worst out in our country because the loudest idiots in the room say whatever they want, and the educated people don't waste their time contradicting them. I mean, number 4 is why Trump was elected in 2016. The media gave him too much attention and people didn't contradict him, they just let him say the garbage he did. Number 4 is why we had an attempted coup recently. I understand why Tenet number 4 is written the way it is, and I listened to your full episode on the tenets, but I'm concerned that number 4 directly contradicts the ideas of number 1 and number 7. Even though TST members are held to compassion, number 4 means that others might not be. I'm scared of affiliating myself with a group that might end up turning or defending alt-right over time. Like I said, I'm really hoping you can help me out with these two misunderstandings because everything else about the Satanic Temple seems exactly like what I need in my life. Thank you for taking the time to read these, and thank you for producing the podcast. Well, you are welcome, Danielle, and these are great questions that you have. Okay, I'll start just by noting that the only people who give a shit about living according to the seven tenets are Satanists, and certainly not all of them. So only a very tiny fraction of people. And my feeling about the tenets, this part is very important to me. My feeling about the tenets is that they are seven parts to one whole, a package deal, as opposed to something we should pick and choose from. The way we interpret any of the last six tenets comes with the understanding that they fall under the umbrella of tenet number 1, strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all. So I don't see a contradiction between tenet number 1 and number 4, the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. That fourth tenet is always the one that stands out to people because of the freedom to offend line. But considering that it falls under the requirement of acting with compassion and empathy toward all, it most definitely does not mean that one should be out there attempting to offend for the sake of being offensive. The best illustration of this is the fact that simply by existing, we Satanists are offensive on a very deep, sincere level to many, many people. To state that not only do we not worship God, but we celebrate, albeit in a metaphorical way, the adversary of what they hold most dear above all else in the whole world is about as offensive as anything could possibly be. If those people could choose to remove hate speech or remove Satanists, it would be very reasonable to assume that they would eliminate the Satanists. So, to truly understand tenet number 4, just remember that the act of being a good, compassionate Satanist is offensive. So that's the tenets part of it. You state, reasonably, that you are not on board for defending hate speech or the right to have hate speech. And fundamentally, I agree with you, of course. I want to outlaw all hate speech as defined by me. I want the same thing that you probably want. I consider myself to be a reasonably intelligent, compassionate person, and I feel like my views and opinions are right. Don't you? They become our views and opinions because we think they're right. But of course, that's the problem we run into in defining the term hate speech. Like so many other things, it's just so very subjective. If some asshole goes on Twitter and writes, "Man, I wish all these fucking gay people would get run over by a bus," is that hate speech? If some other asshole goes on Twitter and writes, "Man, I wish that stupid orange-looking Cheeto motherfucker would get run over by a bus. Is that hate speech? Who do we trust to define it? And is there a way to define it that will satisfy everyone's definition of it or everyone's feeling about it?" Spoiler alert, there is not. There is no way to do that. According to someone out there, there will always be hate speech or some kind of speech that is offensive to them, perhaps very deeply, sincerely offensive to them. And what do we do with those people? Once we get all of the bad speech defined and we have a list of the things that we can no longer say and we stamp that into law, what do we do with the people who are still deeply offended or hurt by speech that remains legal? Do we simply say to them, "Tough shit, you guys are in the minority, so your feelings and opinions don't matter"? And how about context? Does it matter where you say it? Is it okay if you're just with your friends in your backyard? What about on Twitter or Facebook? What about printing it in a newspaper or saying it live on TV from a podium? And that's just one aspect of context. A huge aspect of context is simply time. The mere passing of time changes the context of everything. A couple of examples come to mind. I remember a time when the phrase "colored people" was still fairly common, at least among older people. I watched that term transition into an outdated, offensive term. And then I watched as "people of color" came into play as a very popular, accepted, dignified term. So, colored people, bad. People of color, good. That's pretty fucking subtle, but it's what we're going with today, and it will change again. How about the word "queer"? I remember clearly a time when that word was universally reserved as a derogatory term that assholes would use to insult or belittle gay people. And now, not many years later, not only is it firmly planted in the ever-growing and changing LGBTTQQIAAP acronym, but some non-straight people prefer the term "queer" over any other term. And at the very same time, there are non-straight people who still find that word to be offensive and demeaning. In both of those cases, and plenty of others, I will simply defer to the people with the closest relationships to those words to inform my actions, because I want to do the right thing, and when I can help it, I'd rather not hurt anyone. And honestly, you don't really need to be concerned with the Satanic Temple being in support of hate speech, because at the end of the day, the Supreme Court is in charge of that. The U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled that hate speech is legally protected free speech under the First Amendment. The most recent Supreme Court case on the issue was in 2017, and the justices unanimously reaffirmed that there is effectively no hate speech exception to the free speech rights protected by the First Amendment. Justice Samuel Alito wrote, "Speech that demeans on the basis of race, ethnicity, gender, religion, age, disability, or any other similar ground is hateful, but the proudest boast of our free speech jurisprudence is that we protect the freedom to express the thought that we hate." And Justice Anthony Kennedy also wrote, "A law that can be directed against speech found offensive to some portion of the public can be turned against minority and dissenting views to the detriment of all. The First Amendment does not entrust that power to the government's benevolence. Instead, our reliance must be on the substantial safeguards of free and open discussion in a democratic society." And as a person who is very sensitive to censorship issues the way I am, I do view the idea of putting a Christian theocracy in charge of banning certain speech to be a very dangerous slippery slope. I don't think many of us would be very happy with the result of that. So I do support the decision of the Supreme Court on that. All this is to say, this is a fucking complicated issue. But the least complicated part of it is the tenets. They all make good sense, in my opinion, particularly when viewed as one complete package designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. Thank you very much for these questions. They really did get me thinking a bit, and I appreciate that very much. I'm exhausted already. I hope I did provide some kind of answer to all the questions. Thank you guys for writing in. If you've got a moment out there, please, everyone, visit HailSatanPodcast.com, and you'll find links to all of our various social media platforms. I would be honored to have you join us on any or all of them. There's also a forum there to drop us an email, which I highly encourage you all to do, just like these wonderful people have done. Ask me some questions or tell me a story or whatever. There's also a link on the website to our great Patreon channel where you can find some fun bonus content. There will be more bonus content coming in the near future. Yeah, come join us and do all the stuff, okay? It would be really great to have your support in one way or another. Again, the website is HailSatanPodcast.com. So a claim or even a criticism that I've heard made about the Satanic Temple is that they're a political activist group, or more specifically, that they are just a political activist group, which I guess is meant to say that they're an activist group and not a religion. I definitely plan to get into what makes something a religion at some point on the show, but for now, we're going to focus mainly on the activism bit, since that is primarily what the Satanic Temple has been focused on. If you're a member of the Satanic Temple, you probably get their monthly email newsletter, and over the last several months, I couldn't help but notice that it's been a steady flow of legal updates and political statements. So I thought it would be good to gather up what the organization has been up to and dig into all of that a little bit for this episode. That was originally my plan for the episode. And as I started going through it all, material concerning the Judy Doe abortion case and the earlier Mary Doe abortion case just kept going and going. And I love a good courtroom drama, so I found it to be pretty fascinating, especially once I was able to find so much of the paperwork and even an audio recording from the courtroom in the Mary Doe case. So rather than gloss over a whole bunch of separate cases, I sort of dialed in on the abortion cases. For now, I'm going to walk through the basics of this Judy Doe case, and on our next episode, I'm going to have a conversation with the Satanic Temple's attorney who represented both Mary Doe and Judy Doe. And for those of you who are really into this kind of stuff, I'm going to post a bunch of the legal documents and an audio recording of the oral arguments in the Mary Doe case to our Patreon page for the members over there. For some background, the Satanic Temple posted the following. When TST member Judy Doe sought to terminate her pregnancy in the state of Missouri, she was faced with legal requirements that contravene her religious beliefs and were not medically necessary. Missouri mandated that she receive literature which asserts the arbitrary opinion that the life of each human being begins at conception, and that she endure a 72-hour waiting period designed so that the state's arbitrary position on life will be thoroughly considered before undergoing the procedure. TST argued in our lawsuit that the mandated imposition of religious opinions upon Satanists seeking to terminate a pregnancy violates the Satanic Temple's deeply held beliefs of bodily autonomy and scientifically reasoned personal choice. We have appealed the case to the U.S. Supreme Court for further consideration on our claims to religious freedom. So, the Satanic Temple argued in their lawsuit that forcing Judy Doe to receive those religious materials and presumably contemplate them for 3 days creates an unconstitutional undue burden. The Eighth Circuit Court refused to consider TST's arguments. Naturally, they appealed to the United States Supreme Court in response to that dismissal. That petition asked the Supreme Court to make a definitive and thoughtful ruling on religious exemptions from restrictions to abortion access. And shortly after all that went down, TST sent out another newsletter, and the headline of that one read, TST files motion to disqualify Justice Amy Coney Barrett. What is the story there? Late in October of 2020, the Donald Trump-appointed Justice Amy Coney Barrett was confirmed to the Supreme Court, to the absolute horror of most Satanists, based on what I saw going around on social media at the time. Who is this Amy Coney Barrett, and why is everyone so upset? I have a couple of basic facts about Justice Barrett. She is Catholic. I wonder if that had anything to do with the outrage. She is the first mother of school-age children ever to become a Supreme Court justice. She is also only the fifth woman ever to serve. She's the mother of seven children, two of which were adopted from Haiti, and a young son with Down syndrome. For what it's worth, she is the only current justice to have a law degree from a school other than Harvard or Yale. She graduated at the top of her class from Notre Dame Law School in Indiana, I believe it was. Regarding her philosophy, she says she will not legislate from the bench. Her words, "Courts have a vital responsibility to the rule of law, which is critical to a free society, but courts are not designed to solve every problem or right every wrong in our public life." She adds, "The policy decisions and value judgments of government must be made by the political branches elected by and accountable to the people." But here's the problem, if there is one. Back in 1998, in a document called Catholic Judges in Capital Cases, she wrote that human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception. Now, federal law states that justices whose impartiality can be reasonably questioned should choose to recuse themselves from ruling on those cases. In plain English, that just means that if a judge feels that they're too close to an issue and can't rule fairly on it, they will sit out. The Satanic Temple's motion to disqualify her questions Barrett's ability to remain impartial based on her publicly expressed religious belief that life begins at conception, and her stated opinion that Roe v. Wade was a, quote, barbaric decision that has caused the loss of millions of lives. And, you know, I could be slightly off base here, but that is all pretty standard Catholic stuff, I think. TST's words on the matter are, "In our motion to disqualify Justice Barrett, we argue that any objective observer could reasonably believe that it is not possible for Justice Barrett to set aside her position on the illegitimacy of abortion to fairly and impartially consider TST's religious beliefs." Now, hold on to your butts, guys. I'm about to be honest and somewhat critical of the Satanic Temple here. I know some folks are all in all the time when it comes to the Satanic Temple, a blind faith, if you will. But honestly, I'm just too old to play that shit. As much as I appreciate and support them, I'm just never going to be the guy that sits here and does a scripted infomercial for the Satanic Temple. Issues like all of these have nuance, and I can't pretend that they don't. When I first read this, I had a couple of issues with it. I consider myself to be a very objective observer. Not only am I an objective observer, but I'm actively on TST's side in the sense that I completely disagree with Justice Barrett's personal view that life begins at conception. I just disagree. However, to say that any objective observer could reasonably believe that it is not possible for Justice Barrett to set aside her position, that is a load of bullshit. You can really get in tight and analyze the exact wording of that statement if you want to, but the gist of what TST is saying there is essentially, it's impossible for Judge Barrett to be fair and impartial on this issue because of her personal beliefs. And I have to disagree with that on principle. I don't think that having a personal belief makes it impossible for a judge or any person to be impartial. And if we're being real, every judge has a personal opinion on every issue and every case. And our entire system is built on the idea that we trust them to be fair on the job. Am I naive enough to think that every single judge is in fact fair and impartial 100% of the time? No, of course not. But those are the rules of this game. If you buy into this system, that's the way it works. Imagine, if you will, hypothetically speaking here, if Justice Barrett were a completely liberal-leaning judge and had written articles being enthusiastically pro-abortion and in agreement with everything the Satanic Temple has ever stood for, are we to believe that they would still display a concern about her ability to be impartial and would still file a motion to have her removed? I don't think that would be the case at all. I think it was strictly a concern that she wouldn't rule in their favor, rather than a legitimate concern that it was truly impossible for her to be fair based on the law. I also think they knew it was a wildly unrealistic request that would absolutely be denied, and they used that opportunity to kind of virtue signal about it a little and paint themselves as the unfairly oppressed underdog. And, you know, in some ways in these cases, that part is true, but not this part. As far as a tactical PR move on the part of the Satanic Temple, it's fairly brilliant. I give them an A for that. But I don't know that it was a sincere expression of a concern for fairness. At first, it also kind of bothered me that they would spend money going through the trouble to file something like that, knowing that it would be denied. It felt sort of wasteful. But after thinking about it, if I frame it as just money spent on an advertising campaign, then it makes a lot more sense. The Satanic Temple, and I would suspect most of its supporters, might say that Christianity is problematic, right? Not only is it scientifically vacant, but I suspect many could even say that it's dangerous. But despite that, the Satanic Temple claims to strive for religious pluralism and equality. So are we to believe that despite their honest feelings about the reality of Christianity, they still feel like religious equality is a good thing? I want to believe that is actually the case. But if so, why is that inherently more possible or believable than for Judge Barrett to be fair? It's just worth thinking about. And while you think about it, maybe keep tenet number four in mind. Now, it goes without saying the primary concerns surrounding Justice Barrett relate to women's rights regarding access to abortions. That's what these cases are all about. So what about her record? As it turns out, she has never ruled directly on abortion, but she did vote to rehear a successful challenge to Indiana's parental notification law back in 2019. And also, back in February of 2019, Barrett joined a unanimous panel decision upholding a Chicago bubble ordinance which protects women who are visiting abortion clinics that prohibits approaching within a certain distance of the clinics or its patrons without consent. And as for that motion to have her removed, predictably, the Supreme Court dismissed that, probably while rolling their eyes as hard as they possibly could. And in the end, the Supreme Court chose not to hear the Satanic Temple's case. TST's official statement reads, "While we are disappointed that the Supreme Court has passed on our case, we are nonetheless still empowered to demand that states honor Satanists' religious rights when receiving reproductive care. This lawsuit's progress of demonstrating the legal merits of our case is just one step in our fight to obtain reproductive care in accordance with the tenets." So that is definitely a bummer. If it were up to me, all of this anti-abortion nonsense would be long gone, along with all of the unscientific religious bullshit that gets tangled up in all of it. And if this stuff interests you, be sure to tune in to our next episode, where I will have a conversation with the very attorney responsible for representing the Satanic Temple and the women involved in these cases. Until then, stop by HailSatanPodcast.com. I thank you all for listening. Stay safe out there, please. I'll talk to you soon. Hail Satan. I'm going to shoot it in the evil free service.